before I even sat down and before he even examined me, he didn't have to. He said, you need a heart transplant.
Did he really?
Yes.
Welcome to the Power Within podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Adams. Today, I have a special guest. She's a friend of mine who I have known for probably over 20 years now. Her name is Marta. Marta is a very talented interior designer. She's also a talented artist and paints some beautiful pictures. But in recent years, Marta has faced a really big challenge. Marta's had a heart transplant. What a huge challenge to have to face in your early 40s. Today, Marta also spoke to me about another challenge that she faced. At just the age of 19, Marta lost her mum to breast cancer. So I can only imagine how difficult it was to face a heart transplant without having your mum by your side. Luckily, she does speak about other loved ones who supported her through this challenge. But Marta is an inspiration. She's a positive person. She holds her own faith and certainly inspires me and many others, I'm sure. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast as much as I did. Today I've got Marta with me, and I wanted to thank you for coming along, Marta.
You're welcome, Natalie.
So, Marta, you have faced a very big challenge in your life, one that I can't even fathom to imagine what it's like to have gone through what you've been through, but you've had to have a heart transplant. When did you have that?
I had it in August in 2019.
So not really that long ago, really.
No, not at all.
2023 now, just. So tell me, what were the signs leading up to having to have a heart replacement? How did you know that you were that something wasn't right?
Well, I didn't really know the extent of the problem. I just thought it was stress related, including like a cortisol over functioning as well as adrenaline. Mm. But so when I started getting swollen ankles and just felt like I was hanging upside down, like I felt like pressure in my body. Mm. I went to the doctor and had a few tests, and yeah, unfortunately, one of them, the specialist, had confirmed that I have got heart failure, wow. Right-hand side.
Really?
Yes.
So when you went for that appointment and they confirmed that you had heart failure, did they tell you then, look, your options are, you know, or did you have...
They had to really examine my case to mm-hmm. see the extent of it. So hence followed a lot of ECGs and ECOs and everything like that, that they can check what is happening, and x-rays. And, yeah, from that they discovered that it is quite bad, and it was the right-hand side of the heart is pumps out the blood.
Okay.
And when you've actually got heart failure, your heart enlarges, and then you've got this gateway mm-hmm. that pushes
like your
blood in and out. The valves, well, mine were about 3 centimetres apart. They should be together and
oh, really?
Have no leak in between. So it's like a bridge, like a delta bridge
yep.
opening and closing, but mine was not connected
at
all.
Did you say 3 centimetres apart, yours were?
Yeah.
That's a big gap.
It is. So I was getting flushed with a lot of my own blood, and as well as edema, because that was the effect of not being able to pump out the excess liquid in my body.
So did these symptoms happen over many years leading up to you discovering this, or was it a short, like it all sort of happened in 6 months prior, you're going, I'm not right, something's not right, or
well,
now you look back?
A bit of both, because I can look back that a couple of times that I've had sort of quite big frights in my life. One was missing a plane and I was running to the gate hoping not to miss it, and I just felt like I couldn't run. And after that, when I did get on the plane and come to my destination, I swelled up like I had edema in my stomach. And I just felt like I was super bloated, like, and then my ankles also were bloated, but that was related also to the flight in, you know,
yeah,
Europe.
Yeah, I guess.
But, yeah, after that, I just thought, oh, well, they'll get badly affected. So, I just remember that it was quite traumatic. So yeah, I left it at that. And the following time was when I started going through a bit of stress at work and a lot of pressure, and then I discovered that I was feeling, like, quite pressurized. Mm. Like, if you can imagine hanging upside down and your blood's rushing to your head or stays in your head and, you know, until you turn back around. Well, to me, it felt like that every day that I was, yeah, just like something was blocked. That's what it felt like. And obviously, I mean, at that time I was running on adrenaline a lot, just to survive, you know, the conditions and the situation of that I was in, and quite emotional as well. So that definitely affected my immune system and the way the heart.
Okay, so it affected your immune system, the stress that you were having at work.
Yes, and yeah, because I kept on just feeling unwell. But what comes to mind is actually every time, like from my early teens, when I did go to the doctor for, you know, they give you the general tests, I do remember most of the time I did have lower than average heartbeat.
Really?
Yes. But I just thought that's just, oh, well,
that's
you
me.
Know.
Yeah, I'm just different.
Yeah. And, you know, because athletes have a slow heartbeat.
Yeah.
So I didn't think I was,
all
you
that
know.
Yoga I'm doing.
But, you know, that definitely had, that was, you know, if I went further and investigated that, I may have discovered that there was a defect on my heart.
Wow. And so did it get worse over the years, do you think? Like,
no,
did that gap get bigger, or it's always been that big?
I don't know. I think it got worse when the stress hit. And once you hit 40, everything can happen after that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that was, quite.
And they do say, like, any emotions that you have, you know, if you have pain in your life and emotional upsets, you feel it in your heart. You don't feel it in your head. You actually, you know, like a breakup or a loss of a loved one, you feel it in your heart, and you end up with physical symptoms associated with emotional attachments.
Yes.
And you lost your mum at a very young age, didn't you? How old were you when you lost your mum?
19, and in fact she died of breast cancer, but she did have the heart defect.
Oh, did she?
On the right-hand side as well.
When did you find that out?
Well, I knew all my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but because she died of breast cancer, like, it wasn't really followed up or anything. She was just, but when I did start bloating up, that reminded me of my mum, and I started getting a little bit scared then, because that's what she was like. She was very bloated, like 9 months pregnant.
Wow.
Towards her end of days.
Yeah.
So,
how did you cope with that? Like being a 19-year-old girl, you know, you've gone through the younger teenage years where you fight with your mum a lot, and then you come back and you start becoming close to her again around 19.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was away and I had to come back when my dad rang and said, your mum's not doing very well.
Oh.
And I came back for the last couple of months of her life.
Oh.
It was very hard. Because, you know, it was like first person you want to run to when you hear bad news is your mum. And when I heard about her, that's all I wanted. But anyway, after that, I just acted brave, because that's the way people get brought up. And, you know, I don't think I didn't have any counselling about it, nothing like that. I just put on a brave face, like always do, trying to look like I'm together and strong.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, you fake it till you make it. I'm sure there is a lot of emotional issues that stem from, you know, that. But as we get older, we do try and, you know, analyse and get to know our inner child again and see where things have gone right or wrong, or what may have affected you as a young child. That definitely is affecting your train of thoughts, or your, you know, of current
or
situations.
Your physical health.
Yes, exactly. So so what's important is, if there is any discrepancy in, like, or something different about your bloods or any kind of measurement of your health, please do follow up because you just never know. Yeah. Don't think it's could be, oh, I'm all right, I'm tough, I don't.
Yeah.
But definitely. It's best to check because the earlier you catch something, the more likely, you'll get it. Through it.
Because there's no one in my life, because I've known you for since I was, I think, about 20. So it might be maybe 25 years, roughly. There's no one in my life that I know who is more positive than you. Like from the moment I met you, you've always been a positive person. You never speak badly of anyone. You've always been a shining light in my life. I am amazed at someone who lost their mum at such a young age and the heartbreak that that brings and the challenges that you then face after going through that to still be so positive and only see the best in people. And were you always like that, or did you become like that after you lost your mum because you thought life's too precious to waste? Or
well, I started delving into spiritual just like simple things, excuse me, like crystals and, you know, just simple 90s, you know, fads. But also I read a couple of books that definitely have changed my outlook that have totally brought, you know, made my life much easier and to be able to be positive. And that is actually the Celestine Prophecy, one.
You got me onto that one, yeah.
And also I used to listen to Dr. Wayne Dyer on Real Magic. And so luckily, you know, in my early years, say 16, 17, 18, 19, I was going through my own sort of educational, reading and, you know, seeing that, you know, energy is very important to be positive, otherwise negative is destructive. But I learned that more in my older years, how true that is, how negative is like poison and positive is like healing. So, and that includes your words, your actions, your thoughts especially.
Yeah, so true. And I think you're right. In hindsight, you look back as you get older and go, I wish I'd known that when I was younger, because you do start to look back on your life and analyze things that you've been through and realize everything, whether it's good or bad, is an experience that helps you grow.
Yes.
And it's how, what words you put with that experience, which will determine the outcome of that for you in the long run. But sorry, back to your heart. When, so then you've been into the surgeon and they've said, look, there's heart failure on the left side.
Right hand side.
We're going to do more tests. So you've gone and done more tests, and then you go back into, I imagine, back into the surgeon's room. And then what do they say to you then?
Well, this was actually a specialist. The surgeon comes with operation. But I then was recommended to go to a specialist and doctor that was actually part of the Fiona Stanley team, but he had his private practice in Rockingham, which I attended every month. But I was still bloated. He put me on water tablets and heart tablets, but it seemed not to be working that much because after a couple of years or maybe, my father said, look, this isn't working for you and, you know, look at you, you look like you're pregnant.
Wow.
And he goes, that's it, we need a second opinion.
So only a father can say something like that to you, so... Good on him.
Yeah, whereas, you know, it's so that therefore we went and got a second opinion from a doctor at another hospital that was highly recommended to be an expert. Before I even sat down and before he even examined me, he didn't have to. He said, you need a heart transplant.
Did he really?
Yes. So then we talked and I explained who my specialist was and he goes, right, who is it? And as it was his old registrar. So the new doctor rang my doctor and said, this woman needs to go into clinic care and needs to go on the list.
Really? So
you need to, it's beyond any kind of specialist help. Wow. So that got my, you know, specialist doctor to get his act together and organised me to go into the clinic care.
Really? So what's clinic care?
Clinic care is when you get ready to check if you can go on the list.
Right.
So that involves every test under the sun to check if there is anything else wrong with you.
Ah.
And, you know, I was all good except from the edema, which is the swelling of the stomach with water, my liver and kidneys were suffering.
Mm.
So, in fact, my liver had ferrosis.
Oh, no.
And I'm still recovering from that, I'm sure. But so what happened is they did find two lesions on my liver. So before they could even put me on the list, they have to make sure that, it's
100% healthy.
Yeah, get rid of them. If they're, and what were they, So I had to have many tests on them, MRIs and ultrasounds, and they luckily checked and they said, okay, we'll operate. We'll do one by a laser extraction and the other one will operate and take part of your liver out. So they did that. But as they did that, they had to test it to see if it's, anything dangerous or... And luckily for me, it was benign. It was just a couple of lesions that were, forming from the heaviness, of the water on the impact. So I was very lucky. But those operations were actually, to be more honest, the recovery is more painful than the transplant. Yeah. Just because it's in the stomach area, I think, and,
tender.
Yeah, so after that, I was able to then go on the list. But mind you, I was in and out of the hospital before that even happened quite often because I'd just swell up, they'd drain me, send me home, then I'd come back swelled up.
Really?
Yeah.
How long is this going for?
For about 2 years. Yeah. So, and after that, the last time it happened, he goes, right, if you swell up again, you're not leaving the hospital. So I probably spent half the year in CCU. And it was like I was a local there. Knew all the nurses. They're beautiful people. Loved them all and doctors. So, yeah, I thought that's it. I'm just going to be lying here waiting for the operation, And they thought, okay, we might be able to send you home. And one night they said, okay, well, we'll send you home the next day, but you're going to have intravenous furosemide to drain you and... you'll be walking with a catheter sort of thing.
Oh, jeez.
And I went, okay. And then have Silver Chain come and, help me.
And you had to stay close to the hospital, was that right? Yes. So you were staying with your dad at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, because you lived 2 hours away.
That's right. So that was, So I had to move out from my, my own home in Bunbury and live in 2 hours with my dad. That was fine. But, yeah, basically that night is the night that I was going to be discharged the next day, but, in fact, the doctor came in and said, you're in luck. We found you the perfect match.
How weird is that feeling for you?
I wasn't expecting it because I thought, it took about 5 months to be on the waiting list.
Wow.
So it's not that long, but I thought, honestly, I was going to be longer. It was a total surprise because... and another person got a transplant for me and I never even seen them before and I thought, where did they come from? They weren't waiting. But, yeah, no, it was a miracle.
And then what's it like knowing that it's a miracle that unfortunately someone has to pass away for you to have life? That must be a really weird feeling.
Yes, definitely. It was, I was thinking about that from the minute I found out that I had to have a transplant and the statistics show unfortunately that it is a lot of road accidents that end up being donors. So I knew that's what was probably going to happen and they even said that Christmas is the time that it happens the most. Yeah, like a lot of accidents. And it's usually, unfortunate to say, but it's young men in cars.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I knew that I do believe in destiny and I do believe in fate and faith, of course. So it was a bittersweet. It still is.
Yeah.
It still is. But
you're giving life, though, to someone that would have passed away and just been buried.
Exactly.
So at least that heart is still beating.
Yes. And not only that, it's just, and he, the donor had donated to other parts as well, so other people, and mine was just perfect, and it is perfect. But yes, I mean, I know that no one ever really dies, they just transform. So I knew that, you know, everything happens for a reason, and unfortunately, even those accidents happen. I'm not saying it happened for me, but for some reason, some kind of a learning journey from that. So I have utmost respect and love for my donor and the family. I don't know them, but
I
send out the loving vibes.
So their family would know that the heart's been they would know.
That's the only thing they get to know until the donor, I mean the recipient, is able to get in contact, and they're allowed, but it's through an organisation that controls information. I'm not allowed to disclose my address, full name, even occupation. So we're encouraged to, or we have the option of writing a thank you letter to family, which I did after 2 years. They say not to do it straight away, to give time
for them to heal.
So I did, and I haven't heard back, so you never know, one day I might. That's okay.
I listened to a podcast myself the other day, and it was quite strange because it was all about the heart, and I didn't mean it to listen to this about the heart, but it was about how sometimes we have traumas in our life and we store them in our heart.
Yes.
And but a lot of memories, they say like the heart's almost like another brain, like you store memories in your heart. And do you, and they actually said that they had spoken to heart transplant people who have had vivid memories that weren't their own, that have come from like this person that was traveling, and they've had memories of going to Rome even though they have never been to Rome. Wow. Have you had anything strange or anything like that?
No, I wish, but I did have quite a strong feeling that I could be wrong, nothing's 100% right, but that it was a male heart, because for some reason I didn't feel any more feminine. I just felt for some reason it just feels more.
So you never actually found out whether it was a male or female?
Well, not officially.
No.
And that's another story.
Really?
Because I went actually and to a medium.
Yeah.
And I had a channel reading, so I do have some information, and awesome. Now that I know the circumstances, I can see the bits and pieces that have come out in me that have sort of resembled a male energy. For example, I went and bought like a bug gun.
Okay.
It looks like a real gun,
and it kills flies.
Yes. I don't know, I was always a bit of a tomboy, but I feel more sort of like brave. I feel more brave.
Braver.
And more assertive.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know whether that's just me getting healthier, but I feel a lot more physical. I've got a lot more, I feel like, you know, if there's some project that involves a drill, I won't be scared to use a drill. The funny thing is that apparently my donor's profession was in the building trade.
Oh, really? Wow.
I'm also in the building trade. So.
You are. You're an amazing interior designer.
Thank you.
And actually, I was going to actually ask you this. You've gone into painting. I mean, you've always been creative, and you've painted for me many years ago, but now you're painting and your work is in some stores. And I've seen it on Facebook, and it's gorgeous.
Thank you.
So are you doing more art than what you are interior design, or are you still doing both?
I'm doing both. I mean, now that COVID's over, so there's a lot more, work coming up. I do it only on my level, which is just not stressful, because one thing I know, never ever give yourself up for work.
Yes,
Your health is number one. Don't ever overwork yourself or someone else, because you're indispensable.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. You need to make sure
That's a really good point.
Never, ever give yourself up to work for your health, because
if you don't have your health, you have nothing.
Yeah, and I see it happen everywhere. And that was my attitude. I thought, if I work hard, you know, if I give everything overtime, unpaid, just to get through this, you know, hard time for them,
it'll come back, it'll be calm. Yeah, definitely your health is so important, that you don't want to be overworking yourself or overstressing yourself when you then become unhealthy because of it.
Because really the way the world is in the business sector or in the commercialism, that the fact is that, you know, money runs the show and people are money to bosses, which, you know, they make their money, and if they're not, then goodbye, or you know, they'll work you to the grind.
Sometimes.
Not everybody. No. More like, I would say,
the big corporations.
Yes, definitely. Not every boss, but just that when your name becomes a number, watch out.
Yeah, that's right.
When you get a code for your name, you become a commodity.
And it is, you do, I think as you get older, you realise life's not all about the money either. About having the time. You've got to
have a passion.
You've got to be passionate about what you do. And obviously you've always had a passion with your painting.
Yes. But since because when you lie in hospital for a while, you think, what could you be doing? Like, what am I? Because a lot of nurses even ask, so what are you going to do once you have your transplant?
Healthy. Yeah.
And I go, oh, well, that you've got lots of time to think about it. And I just thought, well, what can I do? I just love painting.
Yeah.
You know, I love painting. I love my work. So I'm still doing that.
Yeah.
But on a, you know, like I said, on a casual level. Yeah, the painting's just, I just needed to express it because I didn't want to do nothing. Like, you have to have something. And
a purpose.
And whatever you're good at, I believe that you need to give to others. Mm. And the paintings were the one thing that people liked. So
yeah.
I kept on going.
The colours that you use, they're always so happy.
Well, they are. They're actually painted to invoke positive emotions in people when they look at it. Purely energetic. And it's how they interpret it themselves. I don't give them any clues. It's just how they feel looking at it. And if they spark some happiness in them, I've done my job.
Yeah, right.
And that's
so do you have a website or a Facebook page that you sell them on?
I've got Atram Art on Facebook.
Atram Art. Yep. So A-T-R-A-M. It's actually Marta backwards.
Yes.
Atram Art.
Yeah, in Facebook. Yeah.
Mm,
yeah, okay. So, but, yeah, you can certainly...
from there.
Yeah.
And so going back to the heart transplant, so you find out that this heart's available... And the doctor comes in, so you don't go home with the catheter and everything else. You stay in hospital. How long is the surgery? Like, what happened?
Okay, well, I found out about 7:30. First thing I did is ring my partner and my dad and a couple of other people, going, wow. And my partner jumped in the car straight away and drove 2 hours, dropped everything. And, you know, he got to the hospital and... It was, they said they were going to operate, it would have been about 10 o'clock when everyone came to the hospital. My dad, my stepmom, my brother, his wife,
my little niece,
and Dom all came and basically they were just going, oh my gosh, you know, they were all like more nervous than I was.
Yeah.
But, I thought it was going to be at 4 in the morning, so somehow I was very calm because I just, what can I do?
It
was either, okay, I'll get through this and having, you know, successful. But it's not always successful. There can be rejection or complications, you know.
So what happens then?
Whatever happens. Some people even go blind from the transplants. Really? Yeah.
Because they obviously get rid of your heart.
Yes.
So it's not like they can put it back in and go wait again for another one.
Mm. Mm. So they do it immediately at the same time.
So you have to, then if there's complications, you just have to work with that new heart.
And be on a lot of drugs to keep the rejection. Because that's what it is. Like your body you can't let your body know it's a foreign object, because when your body finds out, it attacks. And that's how wonderful our bodies are. You know, they're here for us, but you've got to fool the system that this organ, you know, is, you know, slips in and doesn't do anything.
It's here to help. It wants to be part of us.
Yes, it's not an enemy.
So you would have done a lot of meditating and visualising.
Yeah, like going, come on, little heart, you're fine. I also have a lot of gratitude for my old heart. Let's put it this way, because when the surgeon, I spoke to my doctor, Rob, the surgeon after, he said when we actually took your heart out, both sides were totally stuffed. Don't know how you made it this far.
Wow, really?
And he said, yeah, you're very, I mean, yeah, the right and left were buggered. It was probably bottled and for show and tell how bad it was.
Really?
Well, that's what I mean. That's why I'm so grateful to it, because somehow I still felt, you know, alive. And I mean, to be honest,
it shows a miracle of the body, doesn't it?
I don't have any negative feelings towards it, because
it's worked I'm so grateful. Hard to keep you
It got me to the new phase of life. So, I mean, I don't know how he did it, but...
And then how long's the recovery? What, when you've had the surgery, you come out...
Okay, so it took 4 hours.
Like, yay! It was
4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And when you, when you wake up, like, you know, you first you're sort of totally out of your body in a way, because you can't talk, you can't even open your eyes when you're coming out of the operation. It's like you can hear voices and then your family.
What happened? What was going on again? What am I hearing?
Yeah, and then you realise, something's beating in me, like, it's in, it's in. So I realised, I've got it and it's okay. But I went into the ICU overnight.
Yep.
So they kept me in just overnight.
Monitoring,
And then the next day I went to CCU.
Okay.
I just stayed one night and day in ICU. That's straight after the op, where you're connected to every tube possible.
Yes, yeah.
In your stomach, through your, everywhere. You look like a robot. Sort of. And after that they took me to CCU and I stayed there for 6 days and then they sent me home.
Wow.
So I was
about
nine.
But you had to stay
nine.
In Perth for a while?
Yes, for 3 months.
3 months.
And,
Close, and have regular checkups,
yes,
obviously.
Yes, I had to, every 2 weeks, I had to have a biopsy through my neck vein.
Really?
They'd go through the neck vein with little snippets on a wire and they would, like, chop a couple of bits of my heart out to test if it's doing all right.
Wow, really?
My new heart, yeah.
And so then how often after that, after the 3 months, how often do you go back now?
Okay, now just once a year pretty much.
Wow, really?
Yeah, just the yearly checkup. But I do have to still get my liver and kidneys checked because of those lesions. You know, they're still going to be always looking at it.
Yeah, because it's been damaged. But, I mean, the good thing, the liver does rebuild itself, which is amazing. Just keeping – and so you – I know that you eat very healthy and watch what you eat. So that's probably your focus, to try and just keep looking after your body now.
Yes, yes. I mean, you realise how, you know, after being – you know, I'm older now, so I know how certain foods make me feel.
Yeah.
So – and it's as simple as that. It's how does it feel, you know, what does it do to your body.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not perfect, don't get me wrong.
No one is. But
I do remember that it is fuel and medicine, food to the body. It's not like just a hole filler
or comfort. That's right. Food. And well, sometimes you do need a bit of comfort
or
a birthday celebration. But
yeah,
generally it's that 80-20 rule, isn't it?
Yes,
to just try and
stay
on top of it. Wow. So, you were telling me before we started the podcast that you had your vagus nerve removed.
Yeah, well, it was cut. All the nerves get cut when the heart gets taken out, obviously, for the new one to go in. But the one they don't connect back up is the vagus nerve for some reason, maybe because it's impossible or I'm not sure, but they do every other bit, I think. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how that affects me yet, but maybe I'll find out.
Yeah.
So that's so far so good.
And how has the recovery been? Have you had ups and downs?
I think, to be honest, for the first 2 years it wasn't easy. I was still trying to, you know, because it's something that, not, you know, you're still struggling inside with energy levels, with emotional, and because you don't, I mean, unless you tell people that you've had a heart transplant, no one knows.
Mm.
And that, you know, and some people, you know, it's an invisible thing. Mm. So, I don't like telling everyone, but, you know, it did affect my, for about 2 years until it started getting better. So, and now I'm at a perfect, stage. Yeah. But it did, and I had to have...
Would have had to rest up. You would have been stuck, not being able... Well, then COVID hit, so you couldn't get out and be with people.
Yeah.
So then you've got the nervousness of don't want to get even more sick. Yeah. It's a mental thing, really, isn't it?
To be honest, I think... I mean, they give you all the tests all the time as well, and mental tests, and I did diagnose with depression.
Yeah.
At first I didn't take the medication. They sort of said, oh, well, if you don't want, you know, it's up to you what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to, you know, maybe just try without and just meditate and things like that. So I did, you know, the best I could, but it wasn't working. And then they had another test and they put me on one, and I was on that for about a year. It calmed me down. I wasn't stressing out or getting frustrated, but it certainly didn't help me to have an uplifting mood.
Okay.
So really, that's probably the only time in my life that I was quite low a lot. But then I went and had another appointment with my doctor, and I talked about the effects it was having, and they prescribed a different one, and since then it's been wonderful. Oh, like, I've got a zest for life, and... You know, and I am planning to wean off, you know, those to see, you know, I'm sure naturally I can, do it anyway.
But it's a big step that you've been through and emotionally.
Yeah, like when people say, you know, you should do a bit more, and, you know, it's hard to do more when you know, and they forget that, you know, you've just been through something really huge, and they expect you to be, you know, all good again and function normal.
No. Well, it's even just coping with that emotional trauma that to get through.
Yeah.
You sounded like you were very calm and you took it in your stride and you had your faith there. But it's something that's subconsciously you must have had some nervousness about the outcomes.
Well, put it this way, I'm not that afraid of death, to be honest. What I would be afraid of is pain and disability and being unable
to live.
Yes, yeah, on independently. Mm. So to me, I thought I'll surrender. If I die, I die.
Wow.
But if I live, I'll be better. So really, death wasn't a fear. It was more being on dialysis in a wheelchair, carrying my bladder around or something. That would have been more frightening to me than... So I give my, you know, heart to anyone, like, you know, I'm so sorry for anyone's condition that's like that, or even cancer, anything that's, gives you real terror in life.
Yeah.
I knew that mine was like a mechanical problem.
Yeah.
So you get a mechanic... fix it, get a new engine, and it runs. Just hopefully it doesn't seize. Hopefully it's compatible with that car, and mine, luckily, 100% is.
I think you blessed it on yourself too. You made it work because of the love you gave the heart. And heart needs love, you know. Yes, so,
And it's, you know, I can feel, you know, he or her is with me, the donor.
But. And I think your gratitude that you have for life is amazing. And I think that probably is what gives you that physical strength.
It's all about, like, loving where you are and everything you do. Everything can have a sense of peace. Whatever you're doing, even taking a drink of a coffee, you can do it with consciously and appreciate what you're doing.
Yes, conscious awareness, isn't it?
You know, I've learned a lot more post the operation, you know, and after being down, then getting back up, that's when you learn. But it's still a, you know, a journey, and
definitely.
I just want to discover, you know, more how I can influence or help, you know, others. But I'm also limited because I'm on immunosuppressants, which means I can't really be too around too many
people
and bacteria and things like that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, I'll probably be on them for the rest of my life, so I just got to be careful. But I'll just keep on doing my work.
And you can help people online, and you're helping enrich people's lives with your beautiful paintings.
Yeah, I hope so. And in their homes and definitely. Businesses
sometimes. Yeah, yeah, with interior design, because you're amazing. I mean, you did my house, and it's still, I think it still looks good. 11 years later. But is there anything that you'd like to leave with the listeners that you have learned from going through the challenges that you've faced, something that's helped you get through, or something that you've learned from this that might help someone else?
Yes. Remember, your thoughts are just thoughts. They're not real. You can stop any negative thought in the tracks. Just be grateful. Be thankful and realize what you do have. And that you're here to be, to give love and to be loved. And that's the most important thing, like nothing else matters. And what I'm talking about is having a life that you're in love. You're in love with yourself. You're in love with your family, with the people you meet, strangers, nature, earth, and don't give attention to negative media, people, anything like that. Just stay away and it's just realize it's your choice. It's not part of you, your negative thoughts. They are just intrusions from the life we live, from everywhere else. But inside, you're whole, and just remember that, that it's, you know, you love yourself, and love loves you, and everyone does love you too. That's meant to. But that's what I'm saying, is just be positive.
Very good message.
Yeah, and don't let yourself ever, I mean, you. Everyone will slip and have a negative, you know, thought or time, but just you can snap out of it.
You can. I've just read a book called The Untethered Soul, and it's exactly about that.
Yeah, just think about of
let
something
the thoughts
else.
Come, but let them go.
Because thank them.
And if then you had a living with a roommate that said some of the things that your inner voice says to you, you would have kicked them out, or you would have moved out.
Oh yes.
So there's don't listen to them. Kick them out and start putting the good thoughts in, and start. Like you said, look for the love in your life and the gratitude that you can have.
And look around you, like be mindful of everything. You know, you'll get little signs and, you know, signals of, you know, that things that you're on the right track.
Yeah.
And you'll also get, you know, signals if you're on the wrong track, and that's usually the feeling of negativity. So,
yes.
But I just think that, you know, I mean, I'm just so grateful to be in Australia. And with our health system, and not criticising anything, I am very grateful, and especially to the staff, nurses,
that you all know, doctors, that you know so well.
they are the angels on earth. They are so dedicated, and they gave so much unconditional love.
Beautiful.
That, you know, that, I mean, they pay them more. Please.
Yeah. No, that's beautiful, Marta. And I think,
definitely.
No, I really appreciate you coming in and having a chat to me. I mean, I love catching up with you for a chat anytime. Yes. But thank you for sharing your story with the listeners.
You're welcome.
I
think it's thank beautiful. You very much for your attention.
And so definitely check out Marta's Facebook page, Attram Designs. And if you want to have her as your interior designer, I'm sure you can DM her through there as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
If you have any questions for Marta and you'd like me to ask them to her in another podcast, please email me at info@entireliving.com.au. And if yourself or someone that you know would like to be on this podcast to share your story, please also send me an email. And if you did enjoy the podcast, jump on and put a review. It'll help me get this podcast up and running. Thank you for your time.